Welcome to the Science Signaling Podcast for December 16th, 2008. I'm Annalisa Van Hook. In this episode, we'll be discussing recent research on the mechanism of T-cell receptor activation that was performed by Zhu and colleagues and described in a paper published in the November 14th issue of Cell, with commentary from Coons and Davis. Science Signaling editor John Foley summarized this research in a recent Editor's Choice piece, and he joins me now to talk about the paper. Hi, John.
Hi, Annalisa.
This paper is about T cells and their activation, which is important for the immune response. Could you tell us a little bit about T cell activation?
Sure. Basically, T cells are activated by antigen-presenting cells, which present a specific peptide to the T cell receptor that's bound on the major histocompatibility complex on the antigen-presenting cell. And perhaps the best characterized antigen-presenting cells are dendritic cells. The peptide binds to the T-cell receptor, which is composed of an alpha and beta heterodimer, and this T-cell receptor is also in a complex with subunits of CD3. And the CD3 subunits contain so-called ITAM motifs, and these ITAM motifs contain tyrosine residues, and T-cell receptor activation results in the phosphorylation of these tyrosine residues, and then you get recruitment of adapter molecules and then basically triggering of the downstream signaling pathways. And the kinds of things that you see in an activated T cell are calcium flux, proliferation of the cells, and also the production of cytokines.
So T cells are activated when the T cell receptor is activated. How does that T cell receptor get activated?
Well, basically what you have is an interaction, as I said, between the antigen-presenting cell and the T cell. And there are many different receptors and proteins that are involved in this. And what you get is the formation of a so-called immune synapse. This is an area of contact between the antigen-presenting cell and the T cell. The major histocompatibility complex, or MHC protein, on the antigen-presenting cell presents the peptide to the T cell receptor. And there are also co-receptors that are involved in both cells. And then there are adhesion molecules in both cells that keep the cells together while the T cell receptor is being stimulated. And basically what you get is at the center of this synapse, all of the T-cell receptors and co-receptors are clustered. And around the periphery of this cluster, then you have the adhesion molecules. And this is what goes on. So what's important in T-cell receptor activation is that somehow the presentation of the antigen to the T-cell receptor is translated into changes in the CD3 subunits that allows their tyrosine motifs to be phosphorylated. This is an area that's been very well studied. But exactly what's going on to transduce this signal is still unclear.
So did this paper by Zhu and colleagues address that question?
Yes, basically the paper by Zhu and colleagues proposed a new mechanism for T-cell receptor activation. And in their study, they focused on the epsilon subunit of CD3. Now, previous work had shown that the zeta subunit of CD3 was able to interact with lipids, particularly lipids that are found in the plasma membrane. So Zhu and colleagues basically focused on the epsilon subunit, which also has ITAM motifs, and they wanted to see how its interaction or potential interaction with the plasma membrane might affect T-cell receptor signaling.
Does CD3 epsilon interact with the membrane like CD3 zeta did?
Yes, it does. The authors made a peptide that corresponded to the cytoplasmic domain of CD3 epsilon, and they performed binding studies between this peptide and phospholipid vesicles that basically looked like the lipids of the plasma membrane. Now, what was very important here was that the vesicles that they used had different charges, and they found that the interaction between CD3 and the lipids depended on there being acidic or basically negatively charged phospholipids in the vesicle. And when they examined CD3, they found that this interaction was dependent on basic or positively charged residues being present in CD3. In fact, if they had a mutant of CD3 that didn't have these positively charged residues, they didn't get the interaction. And if they had vesicles that didn't have acidic phospholipids, they also didn't get the interaction.
So CD3 epsilon then interacts only with negatively charged lipids?
Yes, that seems to be the case. And it was also interesting that the interaction between CD3 and the phospholipid vesicles was not dependent on the ITAM motif. That's in a different part of CD3 than the cluster of positively charged residues. So the next step was basically to see whether there was an interaction between CD3 epsilon and a real plasma membrane. And the way that the authors approached this was to do a FRET-based study, which is basically a fluorescence-based assay that's dependent on the proximity of two different molecules in order to get the proper readout. And they found that CD3 epsilon did, in fact, bind to the plasma membrane of Jurkat cells, which are a human CD4 T cell line, but that this interaction needed this basic cluster of residues in CD3 epsilon. If you had a mutant CD3 epsilon that wasn't positively charged, you didn't get the interaction with the plasma membrane.
So in those initial experiments, the authors showed that CD3 epsilon binds to the lipids of the plasma membrane, but it doesn't do so through the ITAM motif.
That's correct. So the next step was basically to see what happened to CD3 once it interacted with this lipid environment. And they performed UV spectroscopy analysis and found that when CD3 epsilon bound to the lipid vesicles, a conformational change occurred, basically a kind of a bend or a kink in the chain of CD3 occurred once it bound to the lipids. So the authors performed further structural analysis using NMR spectroscopy. They were able to show that the CD3 epsilon peptide bound to the lipid membrane such that the ITAM motifs were actually buried inside the hydrophobic core of the lipid. It's not a great analogy, but if you want to think about, you know, a jellyfish in the sea with very long tentacles pointing down into the depths of the water, essentially what the authors are saying here is that the CD3 epsilon tentacles align themselves parallel to the surface and they don't drop down in the water. So basically, if you want to think about it from the point of view of looking inside the cell up at the plasma membrane, whereas the other CD3 subunits kind of dangle down into the cytoplasm, the consequences of the interaction between CD3 epsilon and the plasma membrane are such that these subunits actually seem to kind of run parallel to the plasma membrane. So they're not as accessible as the other subunits of CD3.
Did the authors test whether this unusual conformation had an effect on CD3 epsilon's activity?
Yes, they did. They performed in vitro kinase assays with CD3 epsilon peptides that were mixed with the lipid vesicles. And they found that when CD3 epsilon was bound to the lipid vesicles, its tyrosine residues could not be phosphorylated by a tyrosine kinase. However, if you had a non-negatively charged lipid vesicle, then CD3 didn't interact with it so well, and then the tyrosine residues were in fact accessible and were found to be phosphorylated by the kinase. So you would imagine then that in the cell, the tyrosine kinases that are trying to get access to these residues wouldn't be able to do so when the CD3 epsilon is buried along the plasma membrane.
So presumably then, the binding of T cell receptor to antigen would induce a conformational change that allows these ITAM motifs to be phosphorylated? Is that the idea?
Well, that's a good question, and that's the next thing that has to be looked at, because we're still not sure how TCR binding to the peptide is going to affect the CD3 subunits. And you could imagine, for example, some kind of mechanical force causing a rearrangement of CD3 or some kind of conformational change. But that is essentially the question, and that was pointed out in the commentary that you mentioned earlier. What is the signal that triggers the CD3 epsilon to leave the plasma membrane and kind of go back down into the cytoplasm so that it can become accessible? And the authors of that commentary basically talked about the binding of CD3 epsilon to the plasma membrane as acting as some kind of a safety mechanism on the trigger. If those ITAM residues are buried, then you can't get inadvertent activation of the T-cell receptor. You really need to have a strong stimulus in order to get full T-cell receptor activation and downstream signaling.
Well, that sounds like an interesting new model that could certainly be tested.
Yes.
Thank you for talking with me today, John.
You're welcome.
The paper we discussed is titled Regulation of T-cell Receptor Activation by Dynamic Membrane Binding of the CD3 Epsilon Cytoplasmic Tyrosine Base Motif and published in the November 14th issue of Cell. It was highlighted in the Editor's Choice section of the November 18th issue of Science Signaling. If you'd like to learn more about T-cell triggering, check out the Science Signaling archives, where you can find a perspective by Rajat Varma that addresses the interaction of the T-cell receptor with the MHC complex. And for more on how ITAMs are used by other types of receptors, read a review by Abram and Lowell. That wraps up this Science Signaling podcast. If you have any questions or suggestions, please write to us at sciencesignalingeditors@aaas.org. This show is a production of Science Signaling and of AAAS, the Science Society. Our producer is Robert Frederick. I'm Annalisa Van Hook, and on behalf of Science Signaling and its publisher, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, thanks for joining us.